It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey everybody, welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. I don't know about you, but I'm raising children and it is a challenge every day. And today we're going to be talking to Margot Maycall Biznow, who is the author of Raising an Entrepreneur. And she has a lot of experience and done a lot of research into what it takes to raise a kid who has the confidence and the passion and the grit to become an entrepreneur. And as everybody who is an entrepreneur knows, it's not for the faint of heart. And I can imagine these skills are well worth working with your kids on. So Margot Maycall Biznow, thank you for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
I'm so excited. As I think I told you when we met, it's my favorite thing to talk about.
Yes. Well, I love that. So Raising an Entrepreneur is your book. And I was immediately interested in what you know. And the first thing I wanted to kind of just take off the table were sort of the traditional metrics of grades and test taking. So you say this isn't important when we're thinking about entrepreneurial success. Tell me about why should we dispel that myth? Why should we think about things beyond the test taking abilities?
Test-taking skills mean that you are really good at telling the teacher what the teacher wants to hear. You are really good at regurgitating information someone else has given you. These people become great doctors and accountants and lawyers and probably investment bankers. But they're not necessarily great entrepreneurs. I've interviewed hundreds of entrepreneurs, and there is zero correlation between grades and being a good entrepreneur. There are great entrepreneurs who were straight A students and got master's degrees at Ivy League schools and have always excelled in school. And there are great entrepreneurs who were miserable students, barely got out of high school and didn't go to college. And there's absolutely no correlation.
That's interesting. So good or bad. That was my next question, which is like, you sort of talked about it where it's like, there's a tendency. I know that, I have one child who's very meticulous and one who's kind of more exuberant and slapdash, right? So when I think about, and I'm sure every parent does, which is like, what does that mean my child, has the competence for, will get into? Can I tell early on if my child will be more entrepreneurial or not?
No.
I love that answer. I love that answer. Why? Tell me more. Why is it hard to say? Or like maybe the other side of that coin is, can any child learn to be an entrepreneur?
There are so many different aspects to this question. So there's no correlation to what you're like in lower school, mm-hmm. or even maybe middle school, and to what you're going to end up like as an adult. There's no correlation between the traits you're going to exhibit when you're really young and how these are going to develop. I think that parents put too much emphasis on, oh my God, like, what are they doing now? Like, they're not the best in the class and they're not hitting home runs and oh my God. No, come on, like, calm down. It doesn't.
Calm down, everybody. That's lesson number one from Margo. Calm down.
I think it's really important for parents to understand that you can't make your child an entrepreneur any more than you want to make them a doctor or a lawyer or an orchestra conductor. You can give them qualities that make them entrepreneurial, and maybe then they will become an entrepreneur, and maybe they will just be more entrepreneurial in whatever they want to do. Becoming an entrepreneur, and you alluded to this earlier, Josh, it takes a lot. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of risk. It takes, a huge amount of effort. And for a variety of reasons, not everyone wants to do that with their life. And that's okay. But being more entrepreneurial means that whatever you do in your life, you will be better at it. You'll be a better librarian. You'll be a better school teacher. You'll be a better coach. You'll be a better, radio show person. Although you
Personality.
are, even if you're working for someone else, you'll be better working at the United Nations. You'll be better doing anything if you're more entrepreneurial. Of the entrepreneurs I've interviewed, most of them have siblings, and almost none of them have siblings who are entrepreneurs. And the ones who do have one sibling who's an entrepreneur, and then one or more siblings who's not an entrepreneur. So I think it's really important for parents to understand this isn't something you can do to your kids. And you certainly can't t send an incurious child to entrepreneur camp and think that's going to do the trick. And you certainly can't take an incurious child and say, oh, we're going to make something together that I'm going to pick out, and then you're going to sell at the school fair because then you'll become an entrepreneur. You can't do that. It doesn't work.
Well, let's zoom out for a second. What makes an entrepreneur? What are the qualities that make a good entrepreneur in your experience from your research?
So the qualities are, one is resilience,
Because you're definitely going to fail.
because you're definitely going to fail. And I mean, and I'm happy to talk about what parents can do to de develop each of these qualities. And so the whole resilience thing is your whole attitude toward failure. One is curiosity. Constantly looking at things and saying to yourself, how could I change this? How could I fix this? How could I improve this? How could I make this better? Does it have to be like this? Curiosity is super important for successful entrepreneurs who are going to have to keep adapting their show. I mean, I'm sure that your radio show is different today from when you did your first one.
Definitely, definitely.
So it's being curious, it's thinking, it's questioning, it's wondering, it's asking. And then probably the third biggie is grit and just being willing to work harder than anybody else.
All right. So let's talk about what is it? So we've established that you can't force your kid to be entrepreneurial, but you can teach them the skills that sets them up to have these qualities that will enable them to be more successful in whatever they choose to do. So you said resilient, you said curious, and you said grit. So let's take those one at a time. Talk to me about raising a resilient kid.
So I think the whole point of resilience is that you look at failure as how you learn and how you grow. Billie Jean King says, we don't call it failure, we call it feedback. And a resilient person thinks, this didn't work. What have I learned from it? How will I be better next time? And so if you're afraid to fail, you're afraid to take risks. And if you're afraid to take risks, you'll never become an entrepreneur. And you probably won't be particularly successful at anything you do, even if you're not an entrepreneur, even if you're working for somebody else. And you're afraid to take risks if you're afraid to fail, and you're afraid to fail if you don't recognize that failure is how you learn and grow. And this all comes back to parents when their kid fails, instead of punishing them or scolding them, saying, "What would you do differently next time? What did you learn from this?" And not making them feel that failure is a bad thing, but saying, like, "Okay, this is good. Like, this happened this week. Like, what will you do differently?" And it's really important. And also not to say, "Oh, it wasn't your fault. Oh, somebody else did that to you. It wasn't your fault." In other words, saying that failure is bad. Failure isn't bad. Failure is good, and growing from failure is really good.
Failure is feedback. I got the opportunity to have a conversation with Gary Ridge of formerly of WD-40, and he built that kind of learning. That was the kind of culture he built, was a learning culture. Because, and I found that so fascinating, because we are, as adults in business, afraid to fail. Overwhelmingly, we're afraid to fail because that means we're going to be ostracized or not considered for the promotion. So to me, this mentality is something we all need to work on and all need to learn. And I love that failure is feedback. It's a great way to kind of frame that. And how do we learn and use it as moments to move forward, right? Not
But
the end
Josh, I mean,
state.
you're talking, your big thing is culture of companies. And what you just said is exactly the point. If a company punishes people who fail, that company will never have people who are willing to take risks. And so your whole thing about the culture of a company, this is one of the most important cultures that a company can do. I mean, Netflix is famous for this. And Reed Hastings talks about it in his No Rules Rules. Is if somebody fails, you just say, like, "What did you learn from this? And let's get better and let's move on." They don't punish people who fail, and companies that punish people who fail are going to be stagnant, boring, pathetic companies.
Great. Okay, so resilience, learning from failure. Next one, curiosity. How do you I feel that kids are generally start curious, right? We
Yes.
learn by curiosity, but then we kind of potentially lose it. Is that your experience as well? Like what happens there, and how do you foster that?
Well, again, it's parents. You know what? If your child is curious about something, do you say explore it? Or do you say, "Oh, that's stupid"? Oh, that would be a waste of time. Oh, that's pointless. Oh, that doesn't make sense. Or do you say, "Wow, what did you learn? Wow, that's so interesting. Where does this go?" And you show them how you look things up, how you are trying to learn things. And not just by getting on your phone and asking chat.
Right. Okay. Fair.
Which probably we're all guilty of more now than we ever used to be. But
That's right.
teaching them to keep asking and to keep questioning. And, again, this goes back to culture. I mean, people who are curious say, "How can we do this better? What can be done differently? What is missing?" And most entrepreneurs start their company because they get very knowledgeable about something, and then they realize, there's this one piece that's not being done, or there's this one way that it's being done that could be done better. Or there's this one aspect of it that I could really improve. And that's how they start their companies. And if you don't have people constantly saying, how could I do this differently? How could I make this better?" Again, whether they're getting ready to start something or whether they're already in an organization, if they're not constantly looking at ways for it to grow. And by the way, this is one reason a lot of these kids don't do so well in school, because if there's one thing teachers don't like, it's kids telling them how something could be done
Could be
better.
better. Yeah, I have one of those. I have one of those. One of my
Good.
girls is always like, "Oh, why is the teacher doing it this way?"
Perfect.
That's really interesting. So curiosity, following, declaring that you don't know, I think is another piece, right? I feel my observation is that parents tend to take on this because I said so, and it bleeds into as they grow, as children grow into I know best, right? Father knows best, or whatever. It's those kind of cliches. And one of the things that I try to do, and I'm not successful at it all the time, is I don't know. I'm not sure. I make mistakes. Like, how can we do this better? And I it feels like that's kind of the modality, between the two, even the two that we've already talked about, there's sort of like this modeling of growth and or what it takes to grow.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, and I think you say you're doing this, like, I don't really know. Let's see if we can figure it out together. How would we try to figure this out? Is there someone we should ask? Is there somewhere we should go? Is there something we should look at?
And in that, you're not providing the answer or even the direction. You're asking, where should we look to find the answer?
Right.
And then, okay, so let's get to number three. How do we encourage or develop this, help our children develop the skill of grit? So define for me what grit, or define for us, for the audience here, what grit is and how we get there.
So grit is working really, really, really hard toward a goal. And again, the reason there's no correlation between becoming a successful entrepreneur and schoolwork is, yes, there are kids who develop grit in school because they're just really good at studying and, taking tests. But there's another whole group of kids who develop grit in a completely different way. And how they develop grit is they find something they love and they start working on it really, really hard. And because they love it, they work hard at it. And because they work hard at it, they get good at it. And a lot of them, it's sports. A lot of them, it's sports. And I'm a big fan of sports for kids, just for this reason, because you fail and you try harder and you realize what you have to do differently to do better. And at some point you start succeeding, but it's not only sports. I mean, I look at the entrepreneurs I know. Well, I mean, my son, it was writing music. And he wrote 300 songs before he graduated from high school. Somebody else, it was playing chess. Somebody else, it was running for student government. Somebody else, it was debate. Somebody else, I mean, a very few of them, it was actually selling things. Very few of them were quote entrepreneurs when they were growing up. But they all found something that they loved. Eventually, their parents said, "Wow, we realize now how much you love this. And we're so proud of you for how hard you're working in this and your success in this, even if you didn't do so great in biology class." And, and we love that and we're proud of you. And I mean, I can give you so many examples. And sometimes it was a big gulp on the parents' part when they realized the thing that their kid loved so much, but having their
What do you, I
parents.
mean, to tell me, yeah, so give, so tell me, give me an example. When you, what do you mean? Like it was hard for the parents to identify that it was
No,
hard,
like
or like to.
to deal with it. So, like one of my favorite examples is John Chu, who's a wonderful person, and is the director of Wicked, which is coming. The second one is coming out next month, I think, and. His parents were immigrants. They have a Chinese restaurant in Palo Alto, Chef Chu's. His parents really wanted the kids to become, doctors, lawyers, kind of professionals. And from fourth grade, John was just spending all his time making movies. And he was in high school. He was supposed to be asleep. His mom came into his room. He was making a movie on his laptop, and his mom's like, "Go to sleep and stop wasting your time. You need to be ready for school tomorrow." And he burst into tears and said, "You can't make me stop. This is what I love. This is what I want to do for my life." And she said, "Go to sleep. We'll talk about it tomorrow." And she picked him up at school the next day, and she'd been to the library, and she said, "Here's 10 filmmaking books. If you want to do it, be the best." And he said, after that, he said it was, once she realized, and then they became the most supportive parents in the world.
That's
Beautiful.
so, yeah, that's wonderful, right? So you have that kind of first generation immigrant mentality of, you've got to be the best at school, and there's that kind of and I see that. I get that. And so to be able to say, oh my gosh, actually, this is valuable in a way that I didn't, as a parent, think of it in that way. So it really could be anything.
It could be anything. I mean, one of my son's friends is this guy named Benny Blanco, who's famous now because he just married Selena Gomez. But he's written, I th produced something like 25 number one songs. And his teachers all found him really annoying. And none of his teachers liked him very much. And from like high school on, he was like taking the bus to New York on weekends, trying to work with music producers and, trying to produce rap songs. And his mother was like horrified at the songs he was writing, but she saw how much he loved this. And she was just that's, super proud of him and super supportive.
I love that. I mean, this was just to kind of underscore this, when you and I first met, I asked you, okay, what's the one thing? And you said letting your children like choose and work at something they're passionate about. Like that's, and it doesn't matter what. And that to me just really stuck as the, like, you can't force them to like something. You can't force them to have an energy for something in a way where it's like, what is it that you love to do? And I'm just reflecting back what I'm hearing and what's in your book, which is this, if you find this kind of energy towards something, then all those other pieces will fall into place. The learning how to be resilient, the being curious, the being gritty, that this is sort of the vessel for those skills being developed.
No, absolutely. And in my own situation, I mean, we had both our kids had passions outside of school that they were working on like 4 hours a day, 7 days a week. Our younger son, Austin, was writing music, as I said, and our older son, Elliot, was playing tennis. And we don't play tennis and we don't know anything about music. And I'd go to these tennis tournaments with the top 100 kids in the country, and I'd be the only parent who didn't know the rules. But it was only looking back, like when I started to do the book, that I realized how great this actually was. Because if they had been interested in something that we knew anything about, we'd have been all over them with advice and suggestions and helpful. "You might try it this way. Let me introduce you to this person. How about doing it like this?" But we couldn't because we didn't know anything. And so they had to figure everything out for themselves. And I mean, looking back, like, wow, that was really helpful.
When you are thinking about your children, raising children, and you have a grandchild, right?
I have one, yes.
Yeah, you've got one, and it is, what do you think that because that your kids that are entrepreneurs, are they going to be better at raising their kids with this skill just because they're inherent, or are they going to not, or are they going to be less aware of it? I mean, I guess you have the book and it's like you got to beat them over the head with the book, but how do you see, right? Like, I'm just thinking about the intergenerational impact of this. Do you see that that's going to rub off and it's going to build in that kind of way? Is that's my hypothesis. Let's just say that, but but poke some holes if in your experience.
I mean, certainly the entrepreneurs I know, very few of them had entrepreneurial parents. Some did, some didn't. I think my son is very supportive of everything his son wants to do, and his son develops absolute intense passions about things that last about 6 months. And that's fine. He'll be seven soon.
Right,
You
right,
know,
right. Where he's not raising his first round just yet. That's fine. We can wait.
so yeah, he's gone through so many passions at this point. I can barely keep up, but that's fine. And it's interesting to me to see like what sparks his curiosity and what doesn't. And I went to a kindergarten when they were like looking at schools, and I went with them to the different schools. And at this one kindergarten, they asked the kids like, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And here's 5-year-olds, and they, you know, had drawn pictures. And I want to be a farmer. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a ballet dancer. I want to be a teacher. I mean, kids are different, man. You know, like keep an eye out, look at them, watch them, learn, appreciate. Encourage them to follow what appeals to them. They're all different. We were at some restaurant and outside, and a ballet, a dance, Mexican dance troupe showed up, and they were dancing for a few minutes. And after like 30 seconds, my grandson said, "This isn't interesting," and walked off. And I'm like, you know, some other kid is going to be like, "Oh my God, I want to do this. I want to take lessons." You know, it's up to us to watch and observe, and then, oh, you want to take lessons? Sure. Like we do have to do that. We have to pay for the lessons. We have to drive them to the soccer camp. You know, we there's stuff we have to do, but see, you know, see what makes that gives them joy. And I used to say, like, if I signed them up for something, they had to finish the semester, and if they hated it at the end of the semester, they didn't have to do it again. But even that was, it's so interesting to me kind of looking back, because my musician son, when he was, I think, in fourth grade, we had him take piano and he hated it. And I'm just like, okay, scratch piano. And then he started writing music when he was in seventh grade. And that was only because he'd broken his leg at the first week of sports camps. And I was desperately looking around for something to sign him up for, and there was nothing except this like writing music on a computer. And I'm like, "You're going to this." And by the end of the summer, it was like that was it. He was done. You
Oh my
know, it was
gosh.
forever. And so it's just, you know, you just don't know. You just don't know what's going to click and what's not going to click. And then, so my musician son, he's in 11th grade, and he found a piano teacher. And he's just like, all he does now is just play the piano just for hours. And it was exam week. And I said, "Austin, stop playing the piano and go study." And he said, "I have a new song in my head. I just have to play it so I can visualize it, so I can write it down when exams are over." And it was like the first time it hit me, like, oh my God, like our brains are nothing alike. And it also like hit me. It's not that he didn't like the piano. He didn't like the piano teacher who said, like, "See this black circle, play this note." He liked when the teacher said, "Hear this music in your head. This is how you can do it on the piano." So it's just like we don't know this stuff. And you just do your best.
Yeah, I guess it's really kind of a lot of exposure to a lot of different things, and I think listening closely, I think
Listening.
is,
Yes.
listening to your, listening to, or and watching, right? Listening with your eyes, the what it is your child's interested in, and then encouraging them to do that. And that sounds, entrepreneur or not, that sounds like, that sounds like good parenting to me.
But it's also your whole thing, Josh, about company culture, right? I mean, listening is super important, whether it's your people you're working with or people in your family. And that was what your wonderful talk was about, like being a serious listener.
Listener, being a good listener. All right, well, maybe that's the lesson here for all of us. Amazing. Margo Maycall Biznow, thank you so much. You can learn more about her and her her book at raisinganentrepreneur.com. This has been fascinating. I wish we had this conversation maybe 10 years ago, but I don't think I'm so off track. My kids are, I got some kids in high school, so or we're doing our best with supporting their passions. Thank you so much. This is so insightful and enlightening, and I'm really excited to get this out into the world. So thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio, Margot.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for asking me, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are on the internet and you want to check out Great Mondays Radio, you can watch on YouTube at Great Mondays. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.